From high atop Five Bush Media World Headquarters in Rochester, New York, it's the Top of the Tower podcast. I'm your host, Scott Feibusch. We are brought to you this week by Shively Labs. Shively Labs is a division of Howell Laboratories. Shively is a proud employee-owned company with over 50 years of expert antenna and filter design and manufacturing. And we are joined this week via Skype by Lance Venta. Lance, of course, is the longtime publisher and editor of Radio Insight. And Lance, you are just back from the Podcast Movement Convention in Philadelphia. How was it?
Probably the most upbeat radio convention I was ever at.
Really?
Yeah, in the whole 5 years I've been going to radio conventions. It's a change of pace to see people who are passionate about audio and audio programming creation, wanting to learn their craft, find ways to improve, and the fact that there's also broadcast managers, executives, whomever, wanting to learn from these people that do it themselves. There's no ego driven that we know what we're doing. We're just going to do it our way because that way is always what worked.
Which is kind of different from your typical radio convention these days.
Correct.
So one of the things that I noticed from reading your coverage and following along via social media during the convention, there was a fairly substantial presence from some of the players that we associate with traditional broadcasting. What were some of the companies and some of the people that you saw there?
I saw people from every major radio company, lots of small radio companies. There was a huge contingent from Seven Mountains Media in Pennsylvania. Lots of them walking around wearing their company polo shirts. Beasley Media co-sponsored the whole broadcasters side of the thing, of the convention, and gave away lots of Beasley branded pop sockets to whomever wanted one.
Nice.
But there were people Hubbard had a huge contingent there. I noticed a lot of Entercom programmers in the building. Obviously, iHeart had a contingent there. They also were sponsor of some things. Bobby Bones had a panel. Westwood One had a huge contingent, including Opie and a few others for their side. It was, you name it, every radio group was probably represented in one form or another.
So there's represented and there's getting it. Were they getting it?
Yes. When Caroline Beasley is looking at a podcaster and saying, "You have as many answers as I do, and we're going to work together to figure it out," it shows that the companies realize that both sides need to come together to form to figure out how this side of the business is going to evolve.
You know, and my belief has always been that all of us, and this gets into some of the old discussions on some of the message boards about, oh, is streaming radio broadcasting? You know, is podcasting broadcasting? My contention is that any of us who are sitting in front of a microphone generating audio content at this point on the listener end of things, they're all treating it as some form of radio, I think. So why should the industry treat it differently?
Correct. And it's honestly, it's not even radio anymore. It's to the average listener, it's just audio.
Right.
Whether it's listening to music on Spotify and Pandora, listening to a podcast, or listening to AM/FM radio, it's just audio content.
Exactly.
The radio industry needs to realize they're a cog in that machine, but they're still the biggest cog in that machine.
So what did you learn out there that would surprise people who are toiling along thinking of themselves as doing linear radio? What should they know from this?
Just do it. You have a content idea, just make it. The radio, if your company can't figure out a way to monetize it, then do it as a hobby. But just making audio, there's somewhere how you promote it properly, somebody will find that this is the most important thing in their lives.
Hopefully somebody is finding Top of the Tower the most important thing in their life right now.
Well, again, one of the things they said about podcasters who are still starting up or just keep doing it. Forget about analytics. Just do it for about a year. If then you lose passion for it, then walk away. But if not, Just keep doing it as long as you enjoy making it.
Well, there you go. So let's turn a little bit from podcast movement over to some of the things that were happening in the radio industry while you were out there, while you were on your way home. And one of the biggest ones is this news that broke at the end of last week out of Milwaukee, where we knew obviously that Scripps was looking to sell off its radio properties. They already unloaded Tulsa. We knew that there are other clusters, Boise cluster and Omaha, and the flagship cluster in Milwaukee with WTMJ AM and WKTI FM were for sale. I don't think most of us saw the buyer coming, which turned out to be Good Karma, Craig Karmazin's company. You see this coming?
Nobody saw it coming. But in retrospect, it makes sense. If the fact that Karmazin had $16 million to make the sale, to make the purchase, is probably the most surprising thing about it. But considering what his company is doing, it makes perfect sense. So he's building a marketing company around sports brands. WTMJ has the monopoly on Wisconsin major league sports. They have the Brewers, the Bucks, and the Green Bay Packers as mm-hmm. their flagship station. You want to be a dominant sports player in a region, and Good Karma is based in Wisconsin. He also has stations in Madison, and I forgot the other small town.
Beaver Dam.
Beaver Dam.
Can't forget Beaver Dam.
Can't forget Beaver Dam. And now he has the rights, or the contract for right now at least, to the powerhouse in the Packers, and then the Brewers and Bucks, both of whom are on the upswing and probably headed to the playoffs this year.
And if anything, this kind of cleans up somewhat what had been a crowded scene there, because you have Karmazin and Good Karma, who are already doing sports in the market on ESPN 540 WAUK, which is a decent daytime signal, a little iffy at night in the market. And then you had the strong sports presence on WTMJ, which was not otherwise a sports station traditionally. And then you also have smaller players over at Entercom, WSSP and AM with a translator. And then WOKY from iHeart, which I don't think even has a translator attached to it. I think it's just an AM.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, last time I looked. I know where they
get
a
translator. By the way, if you're interested in a Milwaukee AM and translator, I hear these people at Fibush Media have one up for sale.
That is absolutely true. If you check out stationsale.com, you can see that listing and many others. And we should mention, too, pre-ordering now up for the 2019 Tower Site calendar, which is going into production soon. So if you go to fibush.com and you check out the store page there, you can also get a great discount price on the 2018 and some earlier issues. But getting back to Milwaukee, what do we think Karmazin does now? Because there are a lot of theories going around. One of them says, oh, he's going to trade off this big FM signal and swap that out for some cash or for something else. Or does he put ESPN and put his sports brand on this enormous FM signal and just own sports in Milwaukee?
That would be my guess is what's going to happen. They keep the talk on 620 and their translator as well as the overflow programming. But Milwaukee is one of the few big markets without a full-powered FM sports station right now. And it is a huge sports market. And having the monopoly on the three pro sports teams, why not put it on the huge signal of 94.5?
Right. I gotta give it. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, it's starting to generate momentum with the country format a few years after it flipped from AC, but it's still the number two country station in town. It's only a share behind iHeart's WMIL, but there's a lot more revenue to be generated with a successful sports station.
I've got to give some props here. First of all, if he is listening, to Tom Langmeier, who has been doing just a phenomenal job at the helm there in Milwaukee of keeping WTMJ up there near the top and having built WKTI. I know he takes a lot of pride in that. But then also Chris Tarr over at Entercom built a heck of a translator, actually, for WSSP. That's not a bad FM signal
right.
for what it is. But no, again, you're right. It can't compare to 100,000 watts of WKTI. Absolutely not.
Right. And again, with the AM and translator, it's only at a 1-3 share. And that's the number one sports stick in town, not counting WAUK, which is not rated, with that caveat.
Interesting. Interesting. Of course, it helps Karmazin build. He's in other markets, too. Most notably, I think Cleveland is
Cleveland, West Palm Beach.
And West Palm Beach.
Outside of Wisconsin, right.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting, obviously, to keep an eye on him. We keep some speculation going then about what happens to these other Scripps, formerly Journal Broadcast Group markets. Particularly the one that I'm looking at with some interest is Omaha, not only because I was out there last year and actually visited this cluster, but that Omaha cluster, and this plays into our next story too, the Omaha cluster is incredibly interlinked to the Scripps TV station there, KMTV, Channel 3. They're in the same building, share some of the same management, share a lot of on-air content back and forth between radio and TV, news and sports and weather. Untangling that for whoever buys that radio cluster there, that's going to be an interesting task, and I wonder if that's one reason why that's sitting on the market.
Well, so far, where everyone is 0 for 2 in who we expected Scripps to sell to. Nobody saw Griffin, who owns television stations in Oklahoma, to come back into radio with the Scripps Tulsa deal. Nobody saw Good Karma coming. At this point, it's not even fair to make a prediction of who it would make sense for.
Agreed. So let's then turn to the other piece of this, because just as Griffin is getting back into the idea of doing radio along with TV, we're seeing one of the players that's been pretty big in terms of doing this kind of media synergy start to back away from it, and that, of course, is Cox Media Group, which made this big announcement just last week that they are looking either for a buyer or for some kind of strategic operating partner to work with them on their 14 TV stations, which are not only paired up in a lot of markets with radio, they're also paired up in a bunch of markets with newspapers, which, I mean, nobody does that anymore. And in fact,
right,
we had a conversation going as soon as this broke, or pinging back and forth, trying to remember all the places where radio is still co-owned with TV. And after CBS pulled out and with Scripps pulling out, there aren't that many of those left anymore.
No, not at all. Like the big, most obvious one closest to the Northeast is the WBAL, AM and TV, WIYY combo in Baltimore, which has been tied together forever.
Yep, and which, like a bunch of others, is sort of a one-off for historical reasons. You know, it's the same way that Sinclair has held on to Como Radio and KVI and KPLZ in Seattle when they haven't done radio in years anywhere else. That was a combination under Fisher that's held on historically, and there are a few others that are family-owned. WHIZ in Zanesville, I got to give props to Wiz there. We're going to have them featured in an upcoming edition of Tower Side of the Week. I had a great visit there last month, but there aren't many of those. And I think, you know, generally the industry has pretty much said, you know what, there aren't enough real-world synergies to put these things together like this and make it work anymore.
Right, unless you have which one that Cox, and I'm still wary of seeing Cox break up, is having the grandfathered trio of WSB TV, WSB Radio, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Yep, that thing is a monster.
Like, even if they break off the television group in its partnership or a sale, the combination of the radio and the newspaper, if radio is next to go and they decide to streamline into like their cable holdings or other things, I just can't see them breaking up that radio group and that newspaper. Same in Dayton, where the company started.
Right, and in Dayton in particular, they actually made a huge investment a few years back. You know, for years, WHIO Radio and TV had been in a building out in the suburbs, completely separate from the Dayton Daily News, and they combined everything into one big newsroom. There's literally a newsroom, and there are TV people working with radio people, working with print people, working with online people, all in the same newsroom. That's going to be an interesting thing to try to unwind, even if the TV station ends up, let's say, being operated by somebody like a Meredith, who's been rumored, or a Gray Television. But it speaks to, and I wrote about this in the column this week, that it's hard if you've only got 14 stations and there are only two or three affiliated with each of the big networks. You lack the leverage that a bigger group now, like a Nexstar or a Sinclair or a Gray has, to say, hey, we've got 50 markets. We can go make a deal with a cable operator to ensure retrans consent in all these markets. We can go make a deal with a syndicator to make sure we can put Jeopardy on all of these stations. That's hard to do if you only got 14 stations.
Right. And at the same time, over the last few years, they've tried integrating their stuff even more. Like, there are other TV radio overlap markets they put under common management in Orlando and Tulsa and Jacksonville.
The Tulsa one was interesting because in Tulsa they actually did this facilities move because they had acquired what had at one time been a Clear Channel-owned TV station. And this happened in Jacksonville, actually, too. But in Tulsa, what's now iHeart and what's now Cox Radio literally swapped studios with each other to put the Cox radio stations back in the same building as the TV station that had gone from then Clear Channel and had made its way to Cox. And so, again, there's investment having been made in these facilities combinations that's going to be interesting to try to unwind. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I don't know. Where do they do it? Cox, the big investment that Cox seems to be holding on to is their Cox Cable and their cable systems that they operate across the country. One of the ideas based off the Disney Fox deal that I could theoretically see, Disney has to sell off all the regional sports networks that Fox currently owns. All the Fox Sports networks were part of the deal, but the Department of Justice is requiring those to be spun off within 90 days.
Right.
Is there a way where Disney goes, oh, we can add owned and operated TV stations from our current affiliates in Orlando, Atlanta, and I believe Charlotte in exchange for maybe Fox Sports Arizona, where they have a huge cable systems presence, and Fox Sports San Diego?
That could be a very interesting move there. Right. Of course, one of the things, again, that complicates it is that then what happens to the other Cox-owned stations that are with CBS and Dayton and with NBC and so on?
Then you also see Fox has been trying to grow in the ownership side, and Cox has Fox stations in not only Boston but in Jacksonville and Tulsa. Perhaps a similar play there, because who knows what's happening now to Fox's acquisition of a bunch of the Tribune spinoffs from Sinclair.
Agreed. There are a lot of balls in the air, and if you really want to keep tossing balls up into the air, you have the Spectrum cable systems here in New York State, where all of a sudden the state is putting pressure on Spectrum to divest them, which politically I have a feeling is not actually going to end up happening. But if it did, yeah, you would probably have to look at Cox along with Optimum Altice, along with Comcast, as probably being the leading contenders for most of those systems, I would have to think.
Right. Well, also, there were rumors previously to that Spectrum was interested in Altice USA. So who knows what happens to that now?
Well, especially since nearly all of Altice's operations are the Long Island, New York City operations that, are under the supervision of New York State, which right now would not be inclined to allow that. Lots of interesting stuff going on out there to consider right now. Lance Venta, thanks for taking a few minutes to be with us on Top of the Tower. What's coming up? What should people be looking for on Radio Insight?
Well, we're just keeping an eye out if there is any truth to the whispers of something going on with Univision and Cumulus that perhaps we'll have more to discuss solidly next week, or in the week after, if there's any truth to those. Who knows what August will bring.
And those are definitely some interesting possibilities. You're right, not a lot of hard fact on this yet, but a lot of interesting signs, domain registrations that you're so good at sniffing out that point at least to the possibility that Cumulus could have a move in it, in a lot of markets where it could conceivably make sense. So definitely something that when it happens, I think you're going to be the first one to have it.
Well, it goes beyond just the domains as well. There's been whispers through people I've been speaking to about this since it was first reported elsewhere back in June. But there seems to be smoke to the fire, at least as of right now.
You got your finger on it. Lots of smoke going on out there. Interesting. Speaking of smoke, actually, one other thumbs up that we should mention at the end of this is the broadcasters there in Northern California up around Redding who are facing just this absolute monstrous fire situation up there that has literally melted some of the mountaintop transmitter sites around Redding, California. And EMF Broadcasting, which is not too far south of there, a couple hours south in Sacramento, had one of these tower on wheels kind of setups sitting in their parking lot that they trucked up to Redding and set up with one of the broadcast clusters up there and got them back on the air with a few hundred watts. to get information to the city. And, you know, if it hadn't shown up, our friend Tom Morris put some pictures up on Facebook and mentioned it. And I think EMF would have probably just let it go without any fanfare otherwise. But they deserve quite a bit of credit, as do all the broadcasters up there who are working so hard to try to keep the public served, the folks at KRCR-TV, who are trying to keep programming on the air as fire threatens their transmitter site. It's been a tough one there, and if anybody in the broadcasting industry can throw some help up that way, I know it will be appreciated by all the folks up there. So, Lance Venta, thanks so much for being with us. A reminder, once again, we are brought to you by Fibush Media and StationSale.com, where you can find a whole bunch of great listings. If you're interested in buying or selling, let me know. Get in touch at StationSale.com. And also by Shively Labs. Shively Labs is a division of Howell Laboratories. Shively is a proud employee-owned company with over 50 years of expert antenna and filter design and manufacturing. We will be back next week from somewhere out on the road in the great American Midwest with another edition of Top of the Tower. Thanks so much for being with us.